This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, look at this guy. You know, you're looking very, very prosperous and in control of your universe at the moment. That's a compliment. I am a little bit jealous of Jason Goliath. The guy seems like he's got his shit together. Look at you. Huh? How are you, man?
I feel swollen, actually.
Why?
I'm gonna be honest. Maybe that's the look of prosper is the young swelling.
What are you talking about? You get shiny cheeks, you got your hair is looking good.
No, we're not using Cuticura anymore, man. We're making money now. We're using products with, you get those products with no vowels in the whole name. Then you know you're spending money. You know those ones, there's no vowels. You can't even using those now.
You're now using,
No, this is not a Vaseline close.
You're using, what is, how do the white people say it? Aqueous cream, because we call it aqueous.
Far from the aqueous. Aqueous, my problem with aqueous is aqueous, just like dry lips, are like a universal symbol for poverty.
My mother used to slather that shit on us when we were, because we went through a stage when we didn't have a whole lot of money, and aqueous cream was the solution to everything.
But look at you, still got that youthful glow. Maybe there's something to the...
Oh, thanks.
I also feel like you shouldn't write a song.
No.
I feel like, you know, there's international rules. Like my mom would always say when I tease somebody's kid and just go, yeah, look at that kid. Then my mom would always go, hey, you must still have kids. And if there's one person in South Africa that's been coming down on people that do music and songs and singing things, it's you. Then the revenge will be,
see what you mean.
You know
They'll
what I mean? I feel like you've
song.
Already ruined your karma with regard to recording anything.
Shit, you're right.
Yeah, you've put it out there. I hate to be the
No, you make a good point.
No, you're going to do like one of those like a sexy eyes. That's the whole song. Then, you know what I mean?
I was already kind of bopping to sexy eyes.
You'll embarrass yourself. There have been a few before you in South Africa. They know themselves. Took chances. Yeah.
Dude, how's your week been?
Dude,
what have you been up to this week?
Man, I'm living my best life. You know, when it's just like, when you just like, I literally been waking up in the morning waiting for Leon Schuster to jump out of my club cupboard and just go, this whole thing's been a joke. it's crazy. Like, I'm a bit tired today because I was shooting at a spinning event last night.
Oh, wow.
And I got to spin in front of the whole crowd for the first time. Like, yeah? I just needed a rum and coke just to embrace the full potential of my coloredness. It was just the best
That's
of the
awesome.
Best.
How long did you go for?
It was crazy. Well, I went until the tires burst. So I burst both tires. And I just kept on going. It was mad. The crowd was going crazy. It was just the most, I can't explain it. I'm still a little bit, I'm buzzing
that
with it.
Is
with
so
no, it
cool.
is mad. It is mad. It is just absolutely crazy. So one of the coolest shoots I've ever done, man.
Wow.
Did you say
you embraced your full coloredness?
Yes.
I mean, how far did it go? I mean, was there a bit of a knife fight afterwards?
No. And I also didn't steal the car. You know what I mean? No. Nobody got stabbed. These events are so crazy. If you ever like see a poster, just go. I feel like literally that's the pulse of South Africa. Like,
really?
It's so raw. Yet it's a family environment. So you got kids running around. You got guys in the cars with their wives. It's just, and just everybody's there for the same reason. It's the craziest thing. You can't even explain.
Did you take the public holiday off?
I did take the public holiday off, which was great. I had one small thing that I had to do, which was go and watch Trevor.
Now, I was thinking about you guys because, when Trevor came out here, I mean, he obviously is still in contact with a lot of people in South Africa. And I know he was mates with you guys, still is. Did you have to do a couple of things with him in terms of appearances, gigs? Did he say he wanted to come play at the
club?
Well,
he jumped on. He did an hour 45 minutes at the club on Saturday night.
Unexpected, so was it booked?
Just a walk-in.
Wow.
Just a walk-in, which, I mean, and I think that only comedians, you know, probably understand that it's a two-way street. So as much as it's a wonderful surprise for the audience, I mean, Trevor's playing to 36,000 people this week with a brand new show. So you want to kind of get some mileage on the material. You know what I mean? You want to just get into it, feel it. And
it's
guys,
exercising
the guys
those
prodigy,
muscles.
Man.
The he
guys,
is. He really
so
is.
I saw him on, he came to the Goliath Comedy Club at Melrose Arch.
Yes, no mention it.
Yes,
Saturday.
No, do it.
We don't mind. We know
so he came through there.
Plug it again. Where is it?
It's at Melrose Arch.
Yes.
And it's delightful. I think that, I mean, we have no shame in going. It's the best comedy club on the
yes,
continent.
Yes, it is.
It's, we went all in. So it's become the home of comedy to the point that when Trevor was here and decided that he needed to test his show, that's where he wanted to do it. And that's, you know, we've had a few walk-ins on that level, and that's what it's all about. You just never know what's going to happen. And
so you were telling me, he appeared on Saturday
night. Yeah, so Saturday night, the guy does an hour 45 minutes. Like, no. Madness. Like, the audience is just losing.
By the way, I just wanted to explain to my audience, the real reason we brought Jason is because we couldn't get Trevor. So we thought, well, we'll get you the second best.
No, I'm basically like Trevor Noah, but in a bulk pack. Like, you know what I mean? I'm the bulk.
You buy him at Macro.
Yeah,
and you buy
that's
Trevor
exactly
at the
it. I come on a pallet. Trevor comes in a glass container. I don't know. But then he came back. He came. So we run a gig out in Maboneng every Sunday that we've been running forever called The Box.
Yes.
Which is this tiny 100-seater intimate little space. And then Trevor popped in again because he wanted to obviously test what he'd kind of, you know, corrected the night before. Wow. And already, like 24 hours later, just a polished, you know, just ridiculous. And then watching him on Wednesday was just crazy. Because, of course, we were in Montreal with him the week before at the big Just for Laughs festival. And
some award?
He got, you know, to say some award is like...
No, but forgive me.
I'm creating context. Because for me, it was some award until I was there. Mm. Then, you know, when you're in a room and you see Jim Carrey walk in, then you know you're in a room, guy. And then Trevor gets honored after Jim. Like, Jim goes up second last, standing ovation before he does anything, goosebumps everywhere. And then Trevor, so Jim Carrey.
Trevor's the apex award then.
So Jim Carrey gets Lifetime Achievement. Trevor got Comedy Personality of the Year. Yo. But that's clearly the bigger deal at the Comedy Olympics, which is what JFL is. And, I still don't think, I mean, I know South Africans know he's huge, but I don't think people understand how huge he is in the context of the rest of the world.
I want to get to Trevor in a second, but I just got to interject with a thing about Jim Carrey. So I saw this video the other day about how Jim Carrey is taken to painting. Did you see this thing?
I heard about the thing, but I haven't seen the thing.
Dude, please do yourself a favor. Whatever you've got on today, whoever you have to see, cancel them.
Yeah.
Spend 10 minutes watching Jim Carrey painting. He's an unbelievably talented artist.
The guy's stupidly talented, man.
And he's so clever. And you think, oh, it's a gimmick, you know, because he's famous and now we care about his art. But actually, he does an unbelievable job. His paintings are spectacular.
And I saw him with my own eyes. Can I just say that I've seen him with my own
eyes?
Yeah. That's a thing. So back to
Trevor for a second.
Yeah.
He is a prodigy, and we don't get the scale upon which he's succeeded here. But the thing that people don't realize about Trevor, and you'll be able to speak to this more than I can, what you just described, everybody goes in South Africa, we go, oh, he's lucky. He got this job. No. He's moved over to America. Now, you just told the story of how he came to your club on the Saturday night.
Yeah.
He obviously went home after that and worked on his material. 100%. Then he came the next day and did a second rehearsal, effectively, for his show that people were paying to come and see.
That's it.
He didn't go and party with the guys. He didn't go and...
And he never has.
Chill. No, he never has. The guy works nonstop. That's how he got where he is.
You know what I put it down else? To? And I can be brutally honest. Trevor is... I can't afford to be the host of The Daily Show. And when I say that, I just think that people sometimes go to luck immediately. But the cost of being at The Daily Show, I mean, I did a lot of research. I studied kind of Trevor as a mentor, not a mentor, but as a case study for my career. And when I was in Strictly Come Dancing, the crew said to me, yes, you're so delightful. And I said, why? And they said, because when Trevor was on, he would do his rehearsal and then he'd go back to his corner with his pen and paper and just be writing comedy all the time. Mm. Spoke to the guys that he used to tour with. And after every single tour where all the boys were at the bar, lapping up the ladies and the love from the crowd, if they would force Trevor to go to the bar, he would sit at the bar with a notepad and not engage with anybody because he needs to deconstruct his show immediately. And the work ethic is at such a sacrificial level. So he sacrifices everything. Like, I always describe Trevor to people as, this guy loves comedy more than he loves his mom. And I'm not saying he loves his mom less than I love my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And just to create context, I'm not taking away from his relationship with his mom because I love my mom and I feel like he loves his mom too. He speaks about her all the time. But I feel like he honestly loves comedy even more than that. Like, it's this beautiful, healthy obsession. So we do JFL, right? So in Montreal, he does two sold out one man shows back to back, 90 minutes each, and does two different sets.
Yes, sis.
Two different one-man shows.
Jesus, that's so just superhuman.
I watch him with a journalist the next day, and the journalist goes, hey, this news just broke today that you did two different shows yesterday. Is it, you know, something to do with The Daily Show? Are you trying to show off? Is there something coming? And the guy goes, no, it's just because I love stand-up comedy, man. I love stand-up comedy, and I got a lot of comedy that I want to get out, so...
He loves it.
That's the bottom line.
I see that there are some morons who are actually complaining that Trevor is charging too much for his current tour in South Africa.
Well,
give me a break.
I saw him charge $150 a ticket for a 6,000-seater.
Give me a break.
And it's my thing. Don't complain about your
broke ass home. 100%. You don't like it.
Yeah. No, it's just like, for me, nobody complained about Kevin Hart when Kevin came.
Okay, but let's go back to you. Because,
yeah, can we just talk about me?
Oh, okay,
I want to talk about you. I didn't get you in here as a substitute for him. It was a not funny joke, but here's the deal.
Love the guy.
Like, what you guys have done, and I've said this before to you, and I'm so impressed with everything that you've achieved with the club. It's hard as hell to start a business. I know that you're looking at things that you don't want to think about.
100%.
Like balance sheets and fucking staff wages.
And I love that you said that. When you said marketing. That million-dollar empire, I literally heard Sars wake up and go, ooh.
Yeah. And doesn't it break your heart that you have – that you put in all the sweat equity in the beginning? Because you have to put in
– No, you're sure. And we still put it in. We're still at the beginning.
Are you guys making cash yet where you can go – You're not?
No.
How many years has it been so far?
So the business is 5 years old. The club turns two in April next year. We're opening our second club in Bramfontein in a couple of months' time.
Nice. Yeah.
Which is super exciting.
Congrats,
on kind of a new model. But it's a smart business in the sense that the core of the business pays for itself. So it's not a major profit center. But what it is, you know, sometimes you've got to have a super long-term view in terms of, A, what is my primary focus? And I can honestly say my primary focus, number one, is Jason Goliath, the comedian, because I'm in love with stand-up comedy, and I love performing. But I started performing in an environment where there weren't enough platforms, and I know it sounds like an old story, but that's the truth, is because comedy is so new in the country, and a lot of people don't understand, when I say that our club was the third club to open on the continent, that's just going to show you how few platforms there are.
Who else is there? There's Parkers and there's...
So there's Parkers at Monte Casino, which is great. And then there was Cape Town Comedy Club, which was the second, which was Kurt Schoenrad down in Cape Town at the waterfront. And then after us, there's the Wackheads Club out at Carnival City, which makes it four now in total, in terms of dedicated comedy
spaces.
Carnival
City?
No comment.
Jeez.
I plead the fifth. Yeah, no. I plead the fifth hard.
Good.
They must have helped him finance. Hard. I mean, they must have.
It's a great deal for comedy because it'll roll out at all their complexes, etc.
I don't have beef, believe it or not. I really don't.
Yeah.
My problem is just like to put anything at Carnival, they have to pay you. You're not going to go and open 100%. A business.
Yes. I go with my I don't even know where that place
is. I don't even know where that place is.
My ice cream container with chicken.
Yeah, you have to stock up on Patkos.
No, you do. You know that the last time I performed there, I drove over like there was a broken road cone in the middle of the darkest section of that inn. Because that road, literally, the hills have eyes. Like, I feel like, yay, that road. And I refused to stop. I had this thing wedged under my car until I got to the light of a toll gate. You know, a big man fearing for his life.
Yeah.
I was just like, what is going on with you? I drove over that thing. I was like, I know it's not. It's got to be hard and plastic. And I'm just like, either the thing is going to dislodge itself, but I ain't stopping. I am not stopping.
There are poor whites in Springs. It's like the White Walkers from the Game of Thrones.
I love everybody. Please listen, note the views of Gareth Cliff are not the views of Jason.
That's totally my view. It has nothing to do with it. Have you seen and have you sued him yet for the Levinson and Levinson t-shirts that Dave Levinson's been putting out?
You know what's the problem?
You must sue him, please.
Jason ate the hotcakes as well.
You can't.
You son of
you
a
can't.
Bitch.
Gareth, you should know this. You can't sue broke people. It's just a waste of your time and money.
That's it.
Just as the roasting begins, eh?
Yeah, welcome.
There is a comedy podcast after this.
Yeah.
So we only have comedians, so you can stay if you want to.
Yeah.
Oh, you got a
podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Dave, that's a big thing to happen to you since Niederberg, my friend. That's literally... Welcome back, the comeback of Dave Levinson, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, make sure you don't miss Levinson later.
Springs.
What?
You had me at Springs.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mentioned Springs and you got excited.
You've got offspring there, we know. David, I don't like condoms, Levinson.
All right, what's happening with you? I'm hearing that you are married, or you're going to get married, or is that, this true? Is it a rumor?
I'm Koratu. You know, I don't know how this whole thing got out, because I'm in this amazing relationship, and I went to ask my lady's mom, like, you know, old school things.
Yeah.
And because she's in Cape Town, it wasn't like I was proposing the next day, and I still haven't.
Okay.
But I'm close. But I had to go and ask, you know, for, you know, may I have your daughter? Well, basically, I just said to her, please, 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 can I marry you? Because I'm just like this one, I'm done.
That's so sweet.
And
so you went and asked permission.
I did. And of course, her mom was like, yes, please. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I mean,
okay. So you've been around for a while.
Her brother was like, are you sure, chief? Are you sure you're doing the right thing?
She's just pulled a zap sign at you.
And she's still, look at her, hot with the zap sign.
No, she is. She's
but,
hot.
But she's, man, you know, she's great. And what's happened is she's also, kind of become, and this is, I can't really want to say this, but she's become my muse, in the sense that, you know, and I think all comedians kind of go through this fearfulness that you're not going to kind of transcend and have a long career. And are you always going to be inspired? Yeah. And my comedy is very much about what's happening in my life right now. So it's like social commentary, but for my life, you know?
Right.
And, I've just been going through all of these firsts, you know, these new experiences, being opened up to new things. You know, I'm living with a woman for the first time, and I'm doing my debut one man show at the Lyric Theatre next weekend on the 18th and 19th of August. And it's, I'd say about 90% of the show is almost like relationship advice. So for me, it's like, if you don't ever want to be in a relationship, come to the show. If you're in a relationship right now and you're heavily in love, come to the show, because believe me, you're going to have babies after that show. And if you're in a relationship and you want to get out, come to the show. You know,
so come it's to
like,
the show.
I'm just like, and that's what I've kind of loved about putting the show together is this. Putting the show together has made me laugh, and it's some of my funniest work, and it's my debut one man, and I've kind of held back on doing it.
Yes,
and
I think this is a big move.
Yeah, so a lot of people have done them, you know, started one man's 3 years into their careers. I'm 6 years in now, and I waited because I wanted to be, you know, like kind of immersed in my comedy voice and my brand and what I represent. I'm just like, if I do 10 specials after this, they must all have the same voice. And I think that a lot of comedians kind of jump into it before having their voice. And by that I mean, so if you watch Seinfeld, Chappelle, if you watch Trevor Noah, you may not know what their new show is going to be about from a content point of view, but you understand what style, you know what you're going to be getting.
They found that rhythm, right?
And you get the same thing from them. So you know what their brand is. You know what to expect. There are surprises in terms of, you know, what their minds can do with content that you process and what they do differently. But you know what the style of Kevin Hart is. You know what I mean? You understand that. So I feel like I finally completely found and I'm comfortable in my style, and I wish the show was tonight. I'm so excited just to get out on stage and bang it, man.
Are there still tickets available for this?
There are a few tickets available, and they're on CompuTicket, and they, because we're filming for box office and Mnet movies, tickets are super reasonable. So you're not gonna pay Trevor Noah money, but you are going to get a much more meaty person. You know what I mean? And tickets are like from 110 to 220 bucks. And I promise you a super hilarious show that's going to push your moral boundaries, kind of in the comfort zone of what you've experienced in your life. I think that's a nice way to put it. But, it's crazy. It's a crazy show.
How personal do you get with the show?
Ridiculously.
Did you have to ask your lady love for permission with some things and said, now listen, I'm going to take it there.
You know, I kind of had to train her that in my life, funny takes priority. So if something is funny, and you know, I always tell young comics,
but just as you pay a price, because when you get home after that.
But then, no, that's why you must pre-approve. You must pre-approve. You see what I'm doing now?
Yeah,
you see what I'm doing now?
Yeah.
Talking about she's the one, she's beautiful, she's amazing.
Oh, okay.
You see what I'm doing now? This is the cost of being able to exploit, you know, the inner secrets.
She's busy shaking her head saying, no.
She doesn't want to come on air.
You don't want to stand up for yourself here? Okay.
But she's like, oh, this is going to carry on later.
But she's so chilled in the sense that because I bounce everything off her and kind of, so I'm always like, you know, I'm always like, our pillow talk is, oh man, I just had the funniest thought. What do you think of da 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 da?
And the
result is, if she laughs, it's in. Yeah, you're on. Just keep talking. Just talk. Yeah.
Hi.
Hey, hello. Baby.
So Jason bounces off a lot of material off of me.
By the way, yes. you are gorgeous. And I can see why he calls you the muse. But it is hard, before you even carry on, it's hard to be with somebody like this all the time, because he's never off, right? He's always on. Am I right?
But it's great. But sometimes I'm like, baby, no, not today. Not now.
Yes,
because sometimes you don't want that pillow talk, right?
Sorry?
Sometimes you don't want that kind of pillow talk.
No, 100%. But I mean, Jason and I, if he's going through a gag or working on a gag, he's very good at asking me what I'm comfortable with and what I'm not comfortable with.
Yeah.
When it comes to like talking about
you, I knew dating a comedian comes, you know, with its pros and cons, and I accept that. And as long as I'm comfortable with whatever he's saying on stage, then, you know, that's cool.
But it's also hard to disrespect the person that you love. You know what I mean? It's like it's like I'm going on stage, and then you don't go on stage and in front of everybody and disrespect your queen. You know what I mean?
No, for sure.
So there's a lot of respect, a lot of consideration, and the fact that I'd just never ever want to be uncomfortable. And there are some things that kind of push that boundary, because you know people come and chat to her and laugh at her a little bit, or with her rather, you know after the show. But she cool, man. She's cool. She's made me better and funny. I'm so cheesy in love, guys.
I can see this.
She's your downfall. She's your muse. The worst.
She's not.
She's my rhythm and blues.
Hey, man. Rhythm and blues.
Those are your vows already.
Done deal.
Thank you, John Legend.
But it is like that is where you get that extra bit that pushes you over the edge, because you've always been funny. That's a talent you've had
100%
since you were a little kid. Obviously, it's something you make people laugh. It's a natural ability for you, which is amazing. It's a talent that some people just never have.
100%.
The fact that you've crafted that, you've worked at it. You're a student of comedy in so many ways. You were saying you kind of study some people, like Trevor, and you look at what they do. And you find ways to incorporate your own personality into that openness and that style, right?
But
then she comes along.
Yeah.
And she takes you up another level.
So without you even knowing that there are other levels. Like, you know, and it's, I think what it's done is, I've always said to comedians, you know, I mean, we mentor a lot of young comedians through our platforms, but I've always said to them, the thing about comedy is, the more honest you can be, the better it will be. Cause, you know, you've got to go on and do stuff that you find funny, not that you think the audience is going to find funny, as one of my basic rules. And then number two is, the closer you get to the truth and the more vulnerable you allow yourself to be on stage, the more engaging you become. So for me, for example, you know, I'm kind of, if I want to benchmark the show personally, I'm benchmarking the show in terms of what I'd like to get out of the show on kind of Raw and Delirious. And I'm always like, go crazy mad in terms of what your ambition is and try and get as close to that as possible. But when I watch those specials, not only are they super ridiculous, but if you listen to the detail of the story and how he speaks and creates the characters within those stories, I guarantee you Eddie Murphy knows those characters. So there are obviously exaggerations here and there to get the funny out. But what makes a special memorable, and if you think about the last comedy special you watched, you probably can go, oh, I love that guy, but can't remember any of the content or any of the material that he spoke about. So that's kind of what happens. You'll laugh at an entire comedy special and then won't be able
Billy
to repeat.
Connolly has that famous line that he gives his audience. He's like, you're going to leave here. You're going to say, I laughed so much. Yeah. Oh, I laughed. And then they'll say, what was it about? And you'll say, I don't know.
100%. 100%. So I feel like when you're super real and super honest, you honestly leave the audience with something.
And you don't have to think. It just happens because you're telling real stories.
It's all true. Like I've got a true story about going on my first date and ordering an Uber and jumping into the Uber, and the Uber driver goes, sort of, chief, I've got a problem. And I'm like, what's up? And he's like, hey, my stomach, chief. And the Uber driver took a 2-flush monster shit in my house. Guys, Uber driver. You know what I mean? You can't write this. How do I sit down and write a concept? Okay. You know what I mean?
The description of a 2-flush.
What made it worse was the guy brought his own box of tissues. Like, I don't have 2-ply in my house. He brought his own box of tissues out of the car, like, just in case I've got a long drop system.
Yeah, maybe he was just trying to be, you know, considerate, because he knows he's already inconveniencing you by asking.
The guy took a 10-minute dump. I had to put the TV volume up. It wasn't just a proper. This guy released bowels. And then all the way, just I was like, I'm so sorry, Mr. Jason. Hey, I'm so sorry. My wife gave me this bloody stametta, which is apparently some herbal laxative.
You know, it's
cock a lung out.
Like, it's pretty dope of you to have let him though, because not a lot of people would. They'd be like, "What?"
I wouldn't.
No,
but if you,
oh, he's going on a. He needs to get to his date.
And I've been in that situation. Do you understand how pressed you have to be to not go to a public bathroom and to ask a customer?
You've
please.
Played in a lot of dodgy places. You've had to do gigs in shitty places, right?
I had the runs at the Underground in Melville. And if you know anything about what those bathrooms were like,
you have to swim to them, don't
till
you?
Till today, I still feel like I got a bit of an itch. You know what I mean? Till today, there's. Yeah, I like that swim to them.
Have you ever been on the stage and not felt like physically sick? Like you could throw up or you're going to shit yourself?
Being on stage that I think
pushes
just
that away.
All ailments. So even if I'm feeling fluey or.
It's like going to battle.
Yeah, there's something about the second you get on, you leave everything there. There's something weird. I don't know if it's the adrenaline or just the excitement or.
Yeah.
But I've never had a moment on stage where I wasn't 100% there. Like I've just been. I don't know. It's also my happy place. I don't know. It's my safe.
I want to get a little bit philosophical here because this country, it's not such a lack of place at the moment. There are a lot of people who are going through a hugely stressful time. The economy is not great. People are losing jobs. They're laying off workers, blah, 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 blah. Politics is fucking annoying. There's so much negativity around. I think this is great for comedy because people have such a desire to laugh and release and find something that's humorous in our situation. That actually, I think this is positive for comedy. Are you seeing that in the numbers? People coming to the club, people who want to be entertained. I mean, if Trevor can do the sellout shows that he's done,
36,000 people, the biggest comedy event in African history.
I think if we were a happier nation, he wouldn't be doing so well.
He kind of admits to that as part of his show. And Trevor's is a political commentator of sorts. I'm not an analyst at all, so I don't kind of touch on politics. So for me, I find myself. You know, and I'm not I've never enjoyed politics, but I watched a TED talk. I can't even remember, like an insert, you know, a piece of a TED talk on WhatsApp. And it was about this Chinese dude breaking down their system, which you'll probably know what they don't have. It's not democracy. It's not.
Yeah,
they've got a system. And he was comparing it to the US in this particular context and based on the dangers of democracy. So his whole thing was people come at them and go, you have to have a democratic voting system. And he goes, guys, that's the stupidest thing, with all due respect to your rights. It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. And then he breaks it down and he goes, you see, the current president of China has been in their government system working for 30 years, started as a municipal manager, became a mayor, moved to a bigger district, and has worked in every single
department. It's like a bottom-up approach. It works.
So it's like a business approach. So when you become the president, you understand all the intricacies of how the government is supposed to run, from the small little towns off the grid, all the way to the big municipal areas. And he's like, the problem with your democracy is somebody without matric can become the president. And that's like going to a big bank and going, all right, guys, let's vote. And there's a handsome guy in the call center and they go, yeah, you must be the CEO of the big bank tomorrow. And there's no bank in the world that would survive such a decision. Yet countries are put kind of in those hands.
Very good point.
Which for me was such an interesting take on it. You know what I mean? So I'm all about democracy, obviously. But it was very, very insightful to understand what the dangers are. Because very often, especially when you come from a place of pain like us, you everything must be positive about democracy. So because we didn't have it before, now we have it, we don't even research it completely and understand what the risks thereof are and kind of have layered systems. So my brain goes, okay, I don't mind voting for a party, but maybe within these parties there should be kind of some sort of criteria in terms of how you become just from a business point of view. So I understand the other side, but I'm just like, the worst case scenario, send everybody in parliament on like a 3-day business class. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just so people understand rands and cents and how to hide the fraud so we don't see it. You know what I mean? Because we know all governments are fraudulent, but don't rub it in our faces. Just be clever about your stealing.
Especially when people are so poor, it's so tasteless to make them feel cuck and steal and show them afterwards.
You know what I
stolen.
Mean? It's a terrible, you're stealing from people with dry lips. You know what I mean? It's a terrible thing. But I never do politics on stage for some reason, just because it's not my thing.
I think it's a good idea. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, your angle's different. Your whole thing is different. And also, people, like you were saying, whether they're in a relationship, whether they're not in a relationship, or whether they're just coming out of one, they can relate to what you're saying.
And relate in the most ridiculous way, because I push it until the end. Like, I finish it. I can't, you know, I like to take a thought. people go, I can't believe you went there. And I'm like, yeah, but I saw your face. You were hosing yourself. You're lucky you had a pee before the show. Like literally. So my favorite type of gag, and most of my closing gags have always been a gag where kind of when I start off, 50% of the audience is with me and the other 50% is like, no, he's not going to go there.
Yeah.
But by the end, I've touched on a point that everybody can relate to so hard. So you go, oh my God, that's been me.
Climb on board.
You know what I mean? That's been me. I mean, my first big closer was about diarrhea. And when I started it, people would be like, gross. And then I'd go like, are you trying to tell me you've never in your whole life had a moment when your body said, hey,
you're the guy to do this with me, because you're not only a very good comedian and a very talented businessman, but you've also got an idea of like the context of stuff.
Yeah.
I want to make a movie. A full-length feature film called The History of Shitting.
Okay, love it.
Because you've told two shit jokes already, and you put a lot of this in there.
I do. I could help you write immediately.
The History of Shitting. Yeah. Listen, imagine you take all the famous moments in history and you give people bowel problems.
Yes.
And you picture and you get great actors, really good actors.
Yeah.
And you've got to have a script and a golden thread, there's got to be some kind of moral. Yeah. You can help me put this together. 100%. But essentially, it's great historical figures taking shits.
Yeah.
And you see them at their most vulnerable and their most human.
And does it have to be a movie? Can't it just be like an exhibition, like an art exhibition where you could get somebody to paint up people having a...
I think it could be a cult movie. I think we could make money, dude.
All right, so give me three of these great historical figures you want.
So, Shaka Zulu.
Oh.
Just before...
Shaka Uzogaka.
Just before he gets killed by his brothers.
Yeah.
He's taking a shit. Yeah. And he's thinking.
What did Shaka Zulu's stomach say before he took that shit?
Exactly.
Boom, boom, boom.
This is what I need you.
I got you. We honest.
Help me produce.
Yeah. I like
yes.
it.
Yes.
Now, wouldn't you go and see that? Even if you didn't admit in the beginning that you'd seen it, it eventually would be the kind of thing that people would watch.
Yeah, Sharknado.
A recording. They'd invite their friends to their 100%. House and watch it again.
Yeah.
And there'd be that scene where the Queen of England takes a gigantic
Yes, the Queen of England, and it looks like guacamole. It's green for some reason. It's green with the same texture. One or two sweet corns inside.
And all the beautiful people who we don't think about doing that, like Charlize Theron and Brad.
Let me tell you, Charlize is a tall woman. That's a stinker. Charlize looks like she can poop the national anthem.
Do you understand? I mean, it sounds very lavatorial and stupid and childish, but I promise you, people would love this movie.
It'd be classic with the Queen. You can have the day that Princess Diana died, right? And they're about to tell her, and the whole family's like, and she's like, give me a minute. And for 5 minutes, she's just plopping and she's hurting.
There are so many things wrong with
her. And the whole family's going, oh.
There's so many.
And then she's like, can this wait? And they're like, no, it's really important.
I think it'll be.
The Royal Cock. Yeah, I love it.
This will be the movie to end all. Because you think about what movies are making money now. It's all special effects and Transformers and
Fast and Furious, whatever. Vin Diesel things. Taking a cuck on the road.
Exactly. Stopping, opening his car door on a major highway and taking one of those bus cucks.
You could call the movie, I Hope Everything Comes Out Okay.
I love it. All right, I like this. I'm telling you, we can do this.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to be an unmentioned writer.
Oh, come on.
You know what I mean? I don't need the credit.
Wouldn't you be proud of something like this?
No, maybe I would. I'd lie.
You did a show with Genie B. You have no reason to start getting embarrassed now.
That is true. I did.
Tell me. Look, I love Genie, but is it hard because... You have to be the funny. You have to carry the weight of the funny through that. She's not unfunny.
No, she's
don't
not.
Get me wrong, but she's not a comedian. If you were doing the show with another comedian, someone who you're on kind of a more equal footing with, then the jokes don't all have to come from you. The pressure's not all on you to be the funny guy.
But that's not the you see. So this is the
what I was mean, this? What the show's called show. So Pairing Up, right?
Famous Last Words.
Oh right,
is the name of the show, and essentially the concept is pairing up a comedian with another famous person from another genre, or you know somebody who's kind of interesting in their career space.
Yeah, it's shallow waters though.
And at the it culminates to the celebrity doing a 5-minute set. But the show is based on. on two people from different disciplines who respect each other, and they have to share. So half of the show was me living in Jeannie's world. So I went to on a spa day because she's all about, you know, balance, and Jeannie waxes my chest. It's the most excruciating. Women are stupid. I had some nipple blood and only my nipples. It was such a fun show in the sense that, you know, it was very easy to create the funny. And just to be supernatural, because it's kind of set in, you know, and shot very reality style. And we just hanging together and speaking about ridiculous things. And it's like a microwave relationship. So you kind of meet in the morning, and by the end of that day, you have to be best friends. It's a weird and wonderful thing.
Yeah. This is a ballsy thing to do, because sometimes it's not going to work. You know, there's some comedians who they're talented and brilliant, but they go up on stage and some days it's just not their day. And when you're doing a show like this, but
that's the point of this. So the point of this show is not to showcase, for me, it's not to showcase whether Jeannie D should or shouldn't be a comedian, but it almost showcases how difficult it is to be a comedian. So we go through the entire process on the show. So where should I start? If I'm writing my first 5-minute set, where should I start? How should I kind of, you know, put my ideas down? And then how do I present those ideas on stage?
And it's brave of her.
It's super brave.
She's the one who's going to.
It is, you know. It's super brave, and there's so many great, great characters that you'll kind of meet in the series, or, you know, personalities. So, like, I mean, I saw John Robbie, you know, and I know I'm leaking
this,
some
out. This
but
comes out this week.
100%. So Monday it premieres on Comedy Central, and it's a fun show.
John Robbie, you made John Robbie funny?
100%.
He only laughs at puns.
So, and the guy was funny.
Like, really?
It's a weird thing.
Don't get me wrong here.
I lost money. I bet against him.
John Robbie, I used to produce for him for like 3 months. It was the worst job of my life. I thought the man had a complete absence of humor.
Yeah, like, you'd be surprised.
Really?
I promise you.
I'm intrigued.
I was hugely surprised.
I'm going to have to watch
the show.
That's
the point. So putting people, you know, so far out of their comfort zone.
Right.
But for me, mainly showing how difficult it is to do stand-up and to help people understand that it's not just about getting a joke on email and then going on stage and telling it.
I would never do stand-up.
I believe in you, though.
Never.
And I think you and I both know you'd do well.
Please, Jason, I would never.
Confidence and timing, dude.
I would hate it if I see.
If you came through, I would dim the lights so that people could see you properly, and we didn't have flare on the camera.
to
put you on. I don't know why. I went there, but it's true.
Yes, Karen.
There's no. You could not pay me enough money to go. What you guys do, I've said this before. I'm not just trying to be nice. It is the hardest thing in the world to get a crowd. To pay money to make you make them laugh.
That's it.
Think about that. People don't feel any kind of politeness about a comedy situation.
They paid money, they want value.
And laughing is a natural reaction.
Yes.
You either laugh or you don't. If you're laughing at something, it's not that you've decided to laugh at it. It happens.
100%.
So for someone 100%. To have the talent to pull that laugh out of you is the hardest performing art of them all.
And it's that hard because the flip side of, you know, when they don't laugh, that immediate your cock. You know, your audience immediately can go, your cock. Yeah.
All right, so let's plug a couple of things because I knew this would happen. We'd run out of time. First thing is go to the Goliath Comedy Club because your life will improve.
Yeah, we've got a great show on tonight called Next Generation, and essentially it's a show that we do once a month where we give the next comedy generation or who we believe is, you know, the guys to watch coming up. There's still some tickets available for that at goliathcomedyclub.com.
Very good.
And then we've got
got your one man show.
I've got my one man next weekend, Friday and Saturday.
Book that now. There are only a few tickets left, so get them now before they're gone.
Please, come. It's going to be great, I promise.
Your last chance, basically.
Yeah.
And then watch the show on Monday.
Famous last words. Myself and Jeannie D are the pilot episode. It's going
to
be great.
As I see it, if you play it right, you could go to the Goliath Comedy Club tonight.
Yes.
You could see Jason on TV on Monday.
Yep.
And then you can go and see his one-man show to put the cherry on top next week.
Literally, you could have a selfie with me next
Friday.
It's
a triple J. It's a triple J.
And he's waited for 6 years to put this one-man show together, so you know he's not there to fuck around.
No, if you want to play games, go to game. We're not playing games.
Dude, it's awesome to see you.
Thank you guys so much, man.
I have such respect for what you
guys
are doing. You are doing such a great thing, and I don't believe that the future is going to be anything but amazing for you, because I know that success is just part of what you've worked really hard to get.
Amen and amen.
All right, and when you are very rich and famous like Trevor, don't do do what he's done when I sent him an email the other day and just pretended he didn't get it.
Here we go.
You still think
the guy reads his own email?
No, of course not. Yeah. But whoever that person is, I'm going to find out. I think it's David Kibuka. He travels. He puts him in a suitcase.
Kibuka, he's producing on the Daily Show.
I know. He's full of himself too.
You don't need to and read he used emails to, either.
I put him on radio first. I supported that guy. Kibuka, I'm coming for you.
Haters going hate.
His feelings are hurt.
Kibuka changed my life, man. He's the Oracle. I call him the Oracle.
Also, very talented guy.
What a nice human. But you too, Gareth. I want to say, and I know people don't say it often enough. You're a stalwart.
We're out of time now, so thank you very much. Very nice.
I love you.
This is CliffCentral.com.